Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2011. Lecture 16, delivered on March 29, 2011. The title of this lecture is Degrees of Leverage.
Today, degrees of leverage. I have used the term leverage over and over in this course in different ways at different times. The term leverage in finance is essentially a fancy way of talking about magnification of effect, magnification of change, magnification of choice. Sometimes in your lives, you will make a small choice that will turn out to have large consequences. Sometimes in physics, a small thing will have a large effect upon a system. So we get this term magnification from the branch of physics called mechanics. And it has to do with the simple idea of a lever. You see, if you have a lever where that is perfectly balanced on its fulcrum, you have someone standing here teeter-tottering and someone standing here teeter-tottering, and there is no magnification of force. But if the teeter-totter is suddenly changed so that there is a lot more on one side than the other, and this person stomps on it, the effect is are quite magnified, and this person goes up here like this. That's the idea of magnification and leverage. So I'm going to start with something that I used to think was shown to people in high school or an early college experience, maybe in a math course. I don't know where I expected it to be shown. But let me show you an idea. We have two people who each buy a $100,000 house. Now, we're going to say that the price of the house is, in both cases, for person A and person B, is going to be $100,000. Now, we're going to say that we have a relative degree of certainty that in 1 year, the price will be, the price at year one will be $20,000. Now, with the first person, this is a person who has no intention of borrowing. He will use all of his own money to finance this person. So the amount of debt for person A is zero. The amount of debt for the second person, he's going to borrow $90,000 of the dollars. Now, the interest rate per year is, let's say, 10%. So after a year, this person will be paying interest of zero because the person didn't borrow any money. This person will have to pay interest of $9,000. 10% of $90,000. Okay, so now let's see what the return was to each of these people. Each of them sells his house for $120,000. So at the end of the period, the price at one is $120,000. And now we can talk about the cost. The initial investment was $100,000 for each of them. The interest payment was zero for the first person and was $9,000 for the second person. So now the first person will have gained $20,000. The second person will have gained $120,000 minus $100,000 is, I can do that. Get off my ass. $20,000. He pays off his loan and he pays the interest back. Okay, $9,000. So he's got $11,000. Well, you say, well, obviously the first person has done so much better. Really? How much did the first person put in of his own money? So his yield on his one-year investment for person A is $20,000 over $100,000, which is 20%. How much did the second person earn? It was $11,000, right? How much did he put in of his own money? $10,000, right? He borrowed $90,000 for $100,000. Okay, $11,000 over $10,000 is what? What is it? ~110%. Is that right? Well, spank my hiney and call me Dorothy. That is the gains to leverage. That's the whole idea behind quote-unquote creative financing, by the way. More largely, yeah. Because he put in only $10,000 of his own money. He gets, at the end of it, $11,000 for putting in $10,000. You see, what you see here is the gains to leverage that happen when you use OPM. Do you know what OPM is? Other people's money. You see, that's what it's all about in this world, is using OPM as much as possible and not your own. You see, because in this scenario, though, notice that there is much greater risk for person B, because if that house varies in price for person A, it doesn't come out 120. It comes out to be 100,000. Well, he's lost nothing. But the guy who was borrowing all that money, if the price he sells it for isn't pretty good, there isn't capital appreciation, he could end up not only not making anything, he could end up in default, not being able to pay back the interest and principal. So there you are. You get a greater return, or at least you expect a greater return, by bearing a greater risk. So this is that idea of the magnification created by leverage, using borrowed money to lever yourself out to higher expected yields on investments. It's something that is risky, but in investments, this is how you want to try to do it, to the extent that the cost of your capital, the marginal cost of capital, is below what you expect to make on that capital. And as that, if that's the case, you will definitely want to use at least some OPM. You might be too scared to go to the extent this fellow did, but a 50% debt-to-equity ratio, 60-70, you're going to make more than the person who declines the opportunity to use debt. Now, there are some who say that we have used debt far, far too much in our economy, and there is merit in that. But at the same time, the temptation and the rational reaction thereto is always going to be there. We can make more in yield when we borrow, as long as we're borrowing at a rate that is below what we expect the yield to be on our projects. That was the whole idea behind what we just did with the MCC IOS exercise. And that's what I'm showing you here. No, this isn't enough for you to go out there and start taking on projects, real estate, creative financing of real estate. But if you take a real estate finance course from me, I'm just going to assume that you understand we borrow money because that magnifies, that levers our investment. That magnifies our expected return when we borrow to build an apartment complex, to build an office building, to build whatever. We're using borrowed money because that we expect to make a magnified return on our own equity investment by doing so. Now, let me take you one more rung into this idea of leverage and magnification that is caused by it. And I'm going to bring up several terms and their associated formulas. First, I'm going to talk about the degree of operating leverage, DOL. The degree of operating leverage, and I better watch what I'm writing here, is a percent change in earnings before interest and taxes divided by the percent change in sales. In other words, we are looking at the magnification that is caused, that happens between sales and operating income. How much is operating income's volatility magnified over the volatility in sales? Now, related to that concept, let me check something here real quick. These formulas, if you don't get them here, the formulas are on 385 and 386. I'm sorry. Yeah, 385 and 386. Now, the degree of financial leverage, DFL, is the percent change in net income divided by the percent change in EBIT. This tells us how much magnification of volatility occurs between the operating income line and the bottom line of the company's income statement. In other words, these are quick, dirty measures that are do about what we were doing earlier. You remember business risk and the contribution of operating leverage to business risk and the financial risk. You remember when we were doing that with those tables and the sigmas and all that CVs? This is essentially the same thing, but it's a quicker, dirtier calculation. To be honest with you, I've seen this one used more as the as a quick reference point in discussions and analysis than the big ones with the CVs, just in real practice. These are quicker and easier to throw together, a little more speculative. But there's one last one, too. This is the metric that takes us from the top to the very bottom of the financial statement, the degree of combined leverage, DCL. Now, the DCL is a percent change in net income divided by the percent change in sales. This is the total magnification of volatility from the top to the bottom of the profit and loss statement, the income statement. Degree of combined leverage. See, if I had this organized, I'm writing, I found a thin marker. Those big markers are like like trying to do calligraphy with a meat hook. Notice something. DOL times DFL. That would be DOL is percent change in EBIT over percent change in sales times DFL, which is percent change in net income over percent change in EBIT. If you look at those, the EBITs cancel, so this actually, if you take DOL times DFL, you would be doing percent change in net income divided by the percent change in sales, which is DCL. Now, that looks like just some arithmetic silliness, but it's actually kind of important because this gives us a way to say, all right, top to bottom, what is the volatility? How much magnification is happening between sales and net income? Now we have kind of a quick, dirty way of checking to see what is the major contributor. What is the major contributor to the magnification? Is it operating magnification or is it financial magnification? In other words, is it the result of the fixed costs or is it the result of the interest we're paying? So through the meat grinder, let me take you on one here, real fast here, is let's say sales 2010-2011. Oops, I put that wrong. Sales 2010-2011. Expenses gives us operating income less interest. Gives us our I'm 100 years ahead of myself. It's that time warp thing that I just finished watching that movie, you know, let's do the time warp again thing. And Little House Rocker, Rocky Horror, Little House on the Prairie, yeah. Rocky, which of course, Little House, Laura Engels gets out and drag, yeah, well, there we go, watch that show every week then, you know, that'd be interesting, do a mashup, Touched by an Angel with Priscilla Queen of the Desert with the Rocky Horror Picture Show, that would be cool. Do you even remember Touched by an Angel? That was such a... God loves you. Okay. Let's take $20,000. Is going in 2011. It's going to go up to $22,500. Now, the expenses in 2010 were $18,000. And... this year, they are in 2011, we are anticipating that they will be $20,000. We come down to the operating income, which I'm going to do as EBIT here. Okay, so we'll take this to... Oh, that'll be $2,000 of operating income for 2010, 20,000 minus 18,000. And then in 2011, operating income will be 22,500 minus 20,000 will be 2,500. Now, our interest expense, let's say we are paying interest expense of 400 bucks, which will take us to an EBT of 16,000. 1600. Will you get off my ass? Okay, yes. And now you notice I can't even erase on this thing. Okay, and then 2500 minus 400 is 2100. Okay, now let's tell you the tax is at, we've had a Republican for a long time, so the tax is only 10%. $160, $210. So we get to our bottom line here, 0, 4, 15, 14, 40, 0, 10 minus 1 is 9, and 20 minus 2 is 8. Is that right? Will someone help me out, for God's sake? Is that right? Okay. Good, thank you. Okay, now. I'm just setting up, this is a real simple problem, but I mean, even if it's big fancy numbers, it's the same deal that's going to happen here. First thing I'm going to do here is the way I do these, if I'm going to need DOL, DFL, and DCL, what I do is I just get all my percentage changes taken care of. Now, I'll need percentage change in sales, I'll also need percentage change in EBIT, and I'll also need, what the hell else will I need? Yeah, that's all I'll need. Now remember the formula that a percentage change is always end minus begin over begin. Remember? So I'm just going to go through each of these. I do all of these at once just so that I can get that part of it, messy part of it, out of the way. And I take my percent change in sales would be 22,500, the end, minus the beginning, which would be 20,000, all divided by the beginning, 20,000. And I'm just going to write out the other formulas and then pull out the calculator. Percent change in EBIT, that's operating income, would be 2,500 less 2,000. Wait. Yeah. All divided by 2,000. And then the percent change in net income is $1,890 minus $1,440, all divided by $1,440. Now, you can do it however you want. I just like to get all of the numbers, all of the formulas laid out, then get the calculations all done at once, and then I've got that out of the way. And you could do things in a different order here in this part, but I'm going to crank through these. Just make sure you get the same numbers I get here, for heaven's sakes. I get 22,500 less 20,000. Equals divided by 20,000, and I get times 12.5% for the percent change in sales. In other words, sales rose by 12.5%. Okay, you with me on that one? Now we're going to go on. We've got 2,500 less 2,000. Equals divided by 2,000 is 25%, 25.00%. And then finally, my percent change in net income is 1890 less 1440 equals divided by 1440 times 100 gives me 31.25%. So my degree of combined, now I can work out my various calculations. Degree of operating leverage, DOL, remember that that was the percent change in EBIT divided by the percent change in sales. My DFL was the percent change in net income divided by the percent change in EBIT. And my DCL, degree of combined leverage, was a percent change in net income over the percent change in sales. So here we go. Percent change in EBIT is 25.00% divided by the percent change in sales, which was 12.50%. So the answer there will come out to be 2.0 times. Degree of financial leverage, the percent change in net income, 31.25%, over the percent change in EBIT, 25%, 0.00%. If I do that one, I would get 31.25 divided by 25% is a 1.25 times. And then the last one, DCL, is percent change in net income, which is 31.25% divided by percent change in sales, 12.5%. And you do have to be a little careful about rounding here. 31.25 divided by 12.5 is 2.50 times. Now, let's talk. I got numbers. Numbers are always fun at parties, but we got to get down to what they mean, what this says to us, and why we would care. What that DCL, start with DCL, that says that we, the magnification of net income is 2.5 times the change in sales from 2010 to 2011. In other words, we can expect net income to change by 2.5 times as much as sales change. Shit. You know what? Grr. Okay. Again, let me say that again, just so you know what this means. Numbers don't have any use unless we can say something narratively about them. In this case, DCL of 2.50 times is telling me that the net income changes by 2.5 times as much as sales does as a percentage. So that in itself is useful to me. I've got a pretty decent magnification factor going on there. But now I can use that thing. Remember I said that I showed you the DOL times DFL equals DCL? Now we can decompose that DCL. And we can say, well, 2.0 times 1.25 should equal 2.50. Is that right? Does it?
Yeah.
Well, I'll be darned. It works. So now we can answer something else. And notice, by the way, this math, this is easy math. It's not as bad as that other, with the coefficients of variation, but it's kind of telling us a lot of the same information. We have quite a bit of magnification happening from the top to the bottom of this net income, of this financial statement. What is causing most of the magnification here? Is it our financing using debt, or is it something else? Yeah.
It's our operating.
Yes. What is it about operating that causes operating expenses that causes volatility? Do you remember?
The operation.
Oh, you are an intellectual colossus. It's the fixed costs. Remember, variable costs don't cause anything to happen because they ride along with the wave. It's the fixed costs that create volatility. So if I were to say, all right, well, geez, we've got a lot of magnification of volatility from the top to the bottom of the income statement. What's causing that? Is it our use of debt or is it our fixed operating expenses? In this case, I could say, oh, it looks to us like it is your fixed operating expenses. So then, interestingly enough, you could answer a little bit more tactical, perhaps even strategic questions. Well, we're really not excited about all this volatility that's happening from sales down to net income. So what should we do? Should we cut back on debt, go more equity and less debt? In this case, the answer would be no. That's not what's really the culprit here. The culprit here is fixed expenses. That's what's causing most of that magnification. If you don't like that magnification, if you want to reduce it, the first place you do not start is by tilting more toward equity and less toward debt. The first place you start is looking at all of these fixed expenses of operations and trying to cut those down, pare those down. Do you see why this is actually useful? For one thing, it's easy to calculate these DOLs, DFLs, and DCLs. And then you actually get useful results. If we want, well, suppose we were to say, okay, well, you know, our investors actually like volatility. That's, you know, some investor classes like more volatility. We want to appeal to a more risk-taking investment community. So what will we do here? And the answer would be the same. Oh, well, the answer would be the opposite. Oh, well, we're already kind of got a lot of our magnification of risk happening because of fixed expenses. So if we wanted to magnify DCL more, we should probably lay off the fixed and maybe move more toward more debt and less equity in our optimal capital structure. Because if we did that, that would bring this number up right here so that we would have more of a balance. Now, I'll tell you this right now, and I've heard this more times, and I'm not sure. It sounds reasonable, but when you ask the why, it's almost hard to explain. But I've seen some obsession with having these two relatively close to each other. Oh, these are way too far apart. We got to do something about that. Now, it seems at first blush, well, yeah, they should be in balance. But if you ask it a little bit, if you think about why should they be in balance? So that's one of those things, though, that I'll tell you as I have heard with my own ears. Well, DOL is higher than DFL. That shouldn't be. Well, why not? Because it just shouldn't. Apparently, it's something about feng shui or something like that. You've got to have everything balanced facing east, or I don't know what the hell. But, you know, okay, well, if you want them in balance, then either you're going to have to lower your fixed expenses or increase the amount of debt in your capital structure, therefore the amount of interest you're paying, which increases DFL. But one way or the other, however you calculate it, these actually, you can do these with real financial statements. Take some companies that are on the Fortune 500 and just run 2009 against 2010 and have a look at what the sources are of the volatility, the magnification, from the sales line down to the net income line. You'll find that they're actually all over the board. Sometimes, I can't remember what company it was a couple of years ago, I just pulled one off the internet. It's 2008 and 2009 statements. No, it was 2007 and 2008. And I found that DOL was just huge, and DFL was really small. And that would indicate, well, if you want them in balance, y'all are going to have to start putting more debt in your capital structure and less equity so that you're paying more interest so the DFL goes up more. Or you're going to have to start cutting back on your fixed expenses of operations to bring DOL down if they want them in balance. I don't know whether, well, actually, you know what? I looked at those same financial statements for the next year, was 2009, and it looked like they had actually been trying to bring these two into balance, because from 2008 to 2009, the numbers were somewhat closer to each other. So it looked like someone had been paying attention to that imbalance and had tried, they were trying to move toward more, in that case, more financial leverage in the capital structure so that they would be balanced. The result of that was, by the way, DOL hadn't gone down appreciably, but DFL had gone up noticeably, which actually had the combined effect of bringing DCL up more than a little bit. So they were actually, in order to balance them, they were making the choice to create more leverage from the top to the bottom of the financial statement. You got the idea of how DOLs and DFLs work? There's a couple of problems in the back of the chapter that you can just do it on, or you can just do it on regular old financial statements that you can find on MSN or Edgar or someplace like that. But remember, on Thursday, I'm going to be giving you a quiz. It's a surprise quiz, so please be surprised. And I will collect those on Thursday as well, those take-home quizzes. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.